Hi, I'm Marie Crowe and welcome back to Green Ball, the Irish cricket podcast show. In this episode, we'll be looking forward to the men's T20 series against India starting this weekend and what challenges the squad will face. We will be reflecting on the brilliant career of William Porterfield, who has just announced his retirement from the game to pursue coaching opportunities. We will be hearing from William shortly, as he reflects on some great memories of his last 16 years in an Irish jersey. We will also look back on the recent women's series against South Africa, where the Irish side recorded a huge win in the T20 format of the game. Also, stay tuned to the show as we will be hearing from Conor Alford, Stephen Donnelly and Barry McCarthy within the Irish camp as they ramp up their preparation for these upcoming India games. So let's get on with the show and introduce you to the panel for today. I'm delighted that Isabel Joyce joins us as always, along with Nathan Johns of the Irish Times. So in this episode, we are going to be chatting a lot about William Porterfield. He has just announced his retirement. Earlier on, Andrew Blair-White sat down with William to discuss his decision to retire, his fond memories of playing for Ireland and what lies ahead for him in the upcoming months and years.
William, has it sunk in yet?
I don't think it has, to be honest. It was quite surreal and was everyone asking. It's only whenever someone says out loud that you're not going to play another game of cricket, that's probably the only time it feels a little bit weird. Obviously, we got the prep camp for India this week, so to be together around the lads, that probably still hasn't sunk in because I've been doing little bits like this with T20 stuff anyway in general. So I think when I go away and then I'll be back home for be back in England for a couple of weeks, it probably might start to, you know, I'm going to guess the New Zealand ODIs will probably be when it sinks in a little bit more, whenever you're not actually there and you're watching it going, oh, like that'll probably when I start feeling it more. But now I'm comfortable with where I'm at and the decision that's been made, so I don't think it was ever going to be a right time as such to do it. You're always going to have those feelings, I suppose, is what I'm saying, no matter when you do it. So yeah, it's strange, but I'm sure it'll sink in at some point.
A terrific career for Irish cricket, spanning the guts of 15-16 years. How do you look back on it? It must be give you an awful lot of pride looking back on all those appearances, all those moments of history.
Yeah, it does, and I think again it's probably something maybe we've got a probably quieter couple of weeks, so sit back and take a look at things and take stock. But just this was the tributes that have gone out and little video that was put together and went out on Cricket Ireland socials and things like that, there was a lot of little pictures and clippets within that had quite a few memories, and that jogs the memories as such. And then so timing as well, like being at Balbo's wedding over the weekend and people talking about it, and it was obviously quite recent then. And I'll probably give Ashley a plug because he probably didn't need to mention me in a speech at the wedding, but that was really nice, and people have different memories of yourself and of the games you played in and things like that. And I suppose when you talk to people, and it's something I've always wanted to do, you just sit on the other side of the fence for a game and just watch it, because like when the fans are talking about those special memories, and don't get me wrong, I'd much rather be in the changing room and be playing, but a little part of you just wants to be in the crowd for one of them, and especially the big game. So and those memories. That's something now that I'll have the opportunity to do, is sit on the other side of the fence and just take it all in and hopefully see many more big performances and a lot of memories for Irish cricket.
And as a young boy growing up playing for Donnymena to start off with as well, like, did you ever believe in your, like, to yourself that you both personally and as a team would grow to the heights that it's grown, a test nation in the ODI championship? You've kind of done so much in a relatively short space of time.
Yeah, we have. And I suppose the short answer to your question is probably no. But then as it evolves and as you go through, you get a little bit of a taster for the Irish underage and start with 13s and then 15s. And someone obviously like Gold Morgan, when he was playing, he was different in terms of he was really driven, and being around him for so long at that age group, it shows you that you can be, that you can do more and always do more. And he did it pretty clear that he was destined to go to the top, but mentally he was, whereas I probably didn't believe as much that we could do that. And then it was probably Joycey as well, to be honest. Joycey being involved in county cricket, and that's probably the first one that I'd seen and was an Irish cricketer playing county cricket and being really successful. You know, one obviously got signed Middlesex, and he was doing it, and Boydie was around at that time as well. But those lads getting picked up, and that started to give you belief to do it. And and probably one of the biggest moments, because I hadn't only made my debut in 2006, but I'd been through the MCC Young Cricketers and had played a bit, so I started to see county cricket as such, and more so in a second team environment, but get that belief then. And the World Cup in 2007 was like, it just reinforced, well, yes, you can do this. You're playing against the best players in the world, and they probably, if you simplify it, the biggest thing is they hit an area more often, and they don't make mistakes as much when they bat, and they've got a couple of world class strengths that they stick to, and that kind of highlighted it. I think Cool Secker might have been up there at the time, or Mills it might have been. That time was Mills would have been the number one bowler in the world, and he was like 80 miles an hour, and gave that belief to the bowlers and the batters and vice versa. So those little things probably took a little bit longer to evolve myself, and I was probably 22, 23 at that point. Whereas, as I said, like someone like Moggy had that from a very young age. But hopefully now, what we've done, especially looking back, you talk about people in that age bracket of late teens, early 20s. Whenever we went to Sabina Park just gone in January, and the lads were talking about, I suppose, where they were at that point, in that game in 2007 against Pakistan, and it kind of reinforced that that started to give people belief, and that those kids wanted to be professional cricketers and they wanted to play for Ireland. And then I suppose you can see the path that quite a few of us since Joycey and Moggy, there's probably about 10 or 12 of us then that got involved at that era, I suppose, of Irish cricket, and then that would have fed in down the system as such. So yeah, that that's a probably proud moment as well, knowing that you had an impact on those lads building up to that. And I suppose fittingly now it was my last game as well at Sabina Park.
Yeah, and you mentioned that 2007 World Cup. I think for a lot of people, it was probably the catalyst for Irish cricket growing the way it has done over the last 15 years. When you think back to that Pakistan game, what was it like in the changing room, well, both during the run chase and after the game?
I'll probably go right back to before the game, because like in the morning of the game, we got there, and if you know the changing room, Sabina Park, they're quite elevated in the viewing area. And I remember there was a little bit of rain around in the morning, and the sheets were still on. And actually, I was up top when they pulled the sheets off, and they pulled the sheet back, and it looked so green from up top. And like that, personally, was like, because we're playing Pakistan, it's a major established Test nation, ODI, like the fantastic history. And I was like, we win the toss, we got a big chance here. Like we can get into them, because they're attack at the time. And then it just kind of happened like that. I think, obviously, we bowled them out for 130, and there's probably about 30 wides in there as well, so we could have made it easier in the run chase. But, that moment for me, I can still remember watching them pull the sheets back, and it was like, it's pretty green. So, like, that moment from there was like, we got a big chance here.
Yeah, and taking over then the captaincy of the side, first of all, kind of how proud did that make you? And I suppose, what were you looking to try and gain, and what do you feel you did gain over your tenure as captain?
I think, yeah, it was obviously something that in the back of mind, I did want to do. I'd done it my whole age groups, like the whole way through the age group system. And I think on the pitch, that really prepared me for on the pitch stuff. I think, if I'm being honest, at the time I was relatively young when I took over. I was 23, and what I probably wasn't prepared for was the off the pitch stuff. Not necessarily the media and things like that. Like the understanding of someone being away from home for 8 weeks that's got two young kids and things like that. Like, I remember we went on one turn. I think it was John Boy and Whitey had kids at a similar time. They might have been about 5 weeks old. We went on a 7-8 week tour, and by the time they get back, they've doubled in age, and more so, and you've missed a lot of milestones. Like, if I'm being brutally honest, I probably had zero appreciation for that when I was 23. I'm like, you're on tour, you're playing for your country, like, why are you getting caught up in this? But now you understand that, obviously, like, people, you've got families, there's a lot of other things that have an impact on someone when they're on tour that can affect their actual cricket, and like various things, and affects everyone differently. So I think as I probably evolved as captain, I understood that a bit more, and it all happened relatively quickly in that sense. And I think that's as big a part of the job as just being able to pick a team and marshal things on the pitch. So that's probably my biggest appreciation for that.
And how difficult was it on those big long trips, not only for trying to manage your players from a captaincy point of view, but personally speaking, you know, you're away for 7-8 weeks, even in the last year or two when you had those COVID bubbles as well. Was it really tough?
I suppose in the recent times, yeah, the COVID thing has probably made it as hard as anything. Now, don't get me wrong, I've also gone on tours where I haven't left the hotel much because I've just been immersed in cricket, and that's not healthy as well. But whenever it's enforced on you, and you're like, it can be really long, and it is hard work. So yeah, that was the last couple of years been very difficult and different with that for different reasons. And it says if something is then going on at home or everything else, and there's got a lot of things going on in the world at that point, it's difficult. Because in one sense we're lucky that we're able to get outside and we're able to play cricket. And then it almost went a little bit of circle on us, because I think it was the Zimbabwe series, we were then cooped up in a hotel and we weren't allowed to leave, and we were sitting, our team room looked over the street and everyone was going about their business as normal. So it's like kind of ironic that we had a role reversal the year before. So but yeah, and I suppose if we go back earlier days as captain, without jumping in and out, I think that when I first took over as well, the scary thing for myself was there was a lot of established players in the team, and I'd never dealt with that side of things before. You had TJ, Boaty, Kyle, Whitey, a lot of people with a lot of caps, and now you have got, I don't know how many caps I had at the time, I might have had 30, and I've taken over the reins and TJ came back and all their things. So these are lads I grew up watching and hoping to break into the team, and all of a sudden I'm in the team with them, and you're starting to make decisions with them. And it was one of the things I worried about, what did they think of me and what did they think I was doing. But at the end of the day, you have to make the right decision for the team, and that's something that I've always kind of had in the back of my mind as captain. Was what all you had to do was, that's what you're in charge of, was making the best decision for the team at any given point. And like, you're not always going to get it right, but you're going to make an educated decision on that. And I suppose the only thing that I'd add to that then is the worst part of captaincy, and it never got easier, was either knocking on someone's door, pulling someone aside of training and telling them you're not playing, because you're going to have 14, 15, 16 guys on tour that all want to be in 11. And that's probably the hardest thing that you have to do, and that never actually got easier over any of the games.
And you did touch on a little bit earlier about county cricket, and I suppose you, when you initially went into the Irish side, there was Ireland were in the Friends Provident Trophy, there were games on there, you had extremely successful stints about Gloucestershire and Warwickshire over a number of years. Did you feel that help your game to reach a new level, and also being immersed in cricket as much as county cricket can be, did that bring your game to another level?
Yeah, very much so. Those early days in the Friends Provident games and things like that, it was great, because you got a couple overseas, you got lads that are either playing international cricket for England, or they've just retired, or they've been left out of sides, and they're playing in those games, and the standard was unbelievable, and to get to play in so many of those was great. And it actually helped me then break into the Gloucestershire side, was get doing well in those games, and they're looking at it going well actually, and that kind of thing progressed me there. But county cricket as a whole, I'm immensely thankful for. Like, you're constantly playing, you're constantly training. There's argument that there may be too many games in the county season, but it stood me in such good stead. Like, if you're not in the ones, you're in the twos. If you're not playing, you're training. There's facilities. It's everything, and it's a lot of things that we're building up towards here in Ireland. And we got to get to that kind of stage where people have that option. And I've been training, playing everything full time, and increasing into pro fixtures, the Ireland fixtures, the Wolves fixtures, and things like that. And look, I think that's going to have an impact, without going necessarily off topic, a little impact on clubs to some degree, because players aren't going to be available so much, which is a downside. But hopefully, those people will still be great ambassadors for the clubs and still play a good number of games and help develop the club. Because in Ireland, we have come from club cricket. It's kind of been a full flip, and we've then gone from top down as such. We've just escalated to the top, and we haven't had the county structure in place, because it's how it's always been. But look where they, but as I said, going too much off topic, in 5-10 years time, hopefully sooner, then lads playing for Leinster, Munster, North West, hopefully more teams than NCU, maybe a fifth team, will be full time cricketers. So you'll be getting the stage of 60-70 full time cricketers that then just won't have time in their calendar to do that. But that has to be managed well throughout that transition.
And touching on back towards your captaincy stint, and you captained the side in two World Cups to great distinction as well. There was the brilliant win over in Bangalore that will be of memory to everyone. It was a fantastic World Cup in 2015 as well. What are the special memories you'll take away from those big World Cup campaigns, and also the wins that you managed to gain?
That England game was massive. It's still one of my favourite games, and I got a first baller. So it's it's like those memories, like the what we had in the changing room after the game, like we went back to the hotel. Like little things like the Bangalore shuts down at 11 o'clock at night. You can't get a beer after 11 o'clock, and that's the be-all and end-all. But if you beat England in the World Cup, you want to have a couple of beers to celebrate. So, guys had a few beers in the rooms already. The hotel were pretty good. They chucked us a couple of crates, and then we managed to accumulate enough to everyone ended up back in my room at a decent room, being captain. Some of the hotel rooms are quite big, so there must have been about 50 people back in my room until the early hours. And it's moments like that you can't buy that, and they're the experiences that you want to play what you put yourself through. And we're fortunate as well that some guys have family there, and those are the memories that you want to be able to share with your family and get them involved in that, because they sacrifice so much as well as you sacrifice so much to get to that stage, and then to actually then put the performances in and get a win in those big competitions. I think it's important to get the family involved if you can do. And then that goes from obviously World Cup to that test match at Lords, when we got everyone, as many people as could, in the change rooms after the game. I think it's important to share those memories, as much as I would have liked the result to have gone a different way.
Yeah, and in recent times, once you stepped down from the captaincy, you came back to play for the North West Warriors, still showing kind of a real sign of trying to get back into the side and maintain your spot at the top of the order. Did you really enjoy that little couple of years back playing with an awful lot of, I suppose, home friends as well?
Yeah, I loved it, and I still do. Like, it's one of the things I considered was still playing the last game against the Knights against the Reds, at the start of July, but it just did clashes with other things, because I've actually really enjoyed that period of, hopefully I've helped scrub the captaincy side of things and talking about it, and like we've got a really good relationship anyway that we can be just talk openly about things, and it's not like I don't feel like I'm imposing on him, and that could be potentially daunting for him, but it shows his character that we're able to have that relationship on the pitch where we can just talk openly about what we think. And as I'd say to any captain, you've got to go with what you feel, and it's your gut and it's your decision, but all I want to do is have a discussion or educated opinion on it, but you've got to go with your gut. And I think it's been a really good relationship, but also being able to help hopefully young lads come through, or like the likes of Steer now getting a call up, like hopefully, I think that was one of my roles when I went back as well, especially when I wasn't necessarily playing even the T20s, was to how can I help him and say Nathan batting around me, and you've also got Scrad, GK and Getz, like you can't, I think a lot of your learning comes in the middle. Like, you can do as much as you want in the nets and coaches, and that's brilliant, but I think during a game, I saw that as my role as much as anything, was to how can I hopefully have an impact on that, as well as winning games of cricket, because we all play to win, professional cricketers. So being able to win a few trophies with them, even going back to winning the 3-day comp, it was 17 or 18, whenever at Gilly, there was actually a funny picture put up at Gilly when we were at Clontarf, and Gillespie, and then to be able to sit with him in the change rooms and get a picture taken with the trophy, like little moments like that were pretty good.
And for the immediate future of Irish cricket, I suppose you've been involved in the preparation for these India games. It's a really exciting summer ahead, both with one dayers and loads of T20s leading up to a World Cup.
Yeah, as I said, it's been brilliant. It's obviously good to see the lads, because I feel I just stepped away and not got the opportunity to see them. I think that would have been a little bit harder, but yeah, to be back and be involved, it's a massive summer, as you said, for Irish cricket. We've got these couple of games, and then going into the couple of one dayers still in the Super League, but after that it's full on T20 until the World Cup. So it's going to be great for the lads, and it's just what they need building into that. Like, it's like I said there, game time is where you learn. Like, you want to get as many games under your belt, learn from the scenarios and kind of move on. So it's a really exciting summer for the squad.
And for yourself personally, just in terms of your aspiration, obviously taking up a role in the Gloucestershire coaching team, which you must be extremely excited about, is that something you really want to pursue in the next coming years?
Yeah, it is. The opportunity came around to go down for the last few weeks to Gloucester. I've been there for probably 3-4 weeks working with them, and that kind of escalated things in terms of retirement, because I'm there to the end of the season now as consultancy role with them. And when I was kind of immersed in that and I got the opportunity, it was like I didn't feel those opportunities came around too often. Like, you've got to work with the county, and I've had a good relationship the last few weeks with Dale Benkenstein and Steve Snell's been there, and kind of feel like I've built up a good relationship with quite a few of the players. So when that came around, it was like, I think I've got to take this opportunity up. So Yeah, as I said, it happened relatively quickly. But yeah, it's something that I've always wanted to do, and I've dipped my toe in a bit with obviously the Ireland role over the last couple of years when the T20s have been on. I've been coming in more so on the fielding side of things and getting involved in the nets, and with the Warriors as well, being kind of assistant coach. It's been really good dipping your toe in and out of the coaching side of things, and I've had a couple of other bits of experience in England with a few other teams. So when this came along, I just thought timing's right. It's the stage of career. Matt will be 38 at the end of the year. As much as I still love playing, one of the things that kind of reinforced that I did love playing was the game against the West Indies when we got dock points for over 8. I think we're 4 hours in the field. It felt like an hour and a half. It actually flew through. So I still love that side of things, but as I said, when the opportunity came up, I felt like I had to take that with Gloucestershire. And yeah, we'll see how that goes to the end of the season and what may come after that.
And final question, if I was to talk to you in around 4 or 5 years' time, where would you like to see yourself personally, and where would you like to have seen Irish cricket go?
So which order to go? The Irish cricket just go from strength to strength. I think it would be lovely to get back in the full swing of things and get the Red Bull stuff back up and running and domestically. And I think it's one of our challenges as a kind of smaller nation as such in terms of funding, is how can we, and the volume of players to be able to compete in all three formats. But I think that's a challenge that the coaching staff, the players, the board, everyone wants. So yeah, I'd love to see us play more test matches and being really competitive and winning series home and away against established nations. That'd be brilliant. Full-time cricketers with all unions would be great. And if we get to that stage, facilities keep improving. The women's game obviously is going from strength to strength. So in 4 or 5 years' time, if we've got all that going on, and as I said, we've got 40, 50 domestic contracted cricketers, you've got your senior staff, you've got the women, you've got everything evolving like that, then I think we'll be in a really good place. And personally, still being involved in coaching. Like, I think, as I said, if this opportunity comes up, and if we get another few involvements with county cricket, just expand my knowledge, really. I'm really excited what Heinrich's bringing, and when he met up with him a few times and talking, and even around training today, like, I think he's a really exciting coach. He's young, got lots of ideas, and I think that it's going to be great for those lads and the journey. Where do you want to see them in 4 or 5 years? I think he's very well equipped to get us to that stage and go with that. So that's one of the, I suppose, downsides of retirement. I didn't get the opportunity to work with Heinrich and on the field, but obviously these opportunities off the field with doing a bit more coaching and things like that, I think he's a coach that I'd learn a hell of a lot from.
So Isabel and Nathan, thank you so much for both joining us. It was brilliant to hear about to hear from William there and listen to him talking about his career. And Isabel, what an amazing career he's had.
Yeah, he's been such a stalwart, and it was interesting just reading some of the things that he said about his career. You know, playing in Sabina Park for his final match and realising he was the only person still involved in the team that was there in that historic day in 2007. I think that was probably a light bulb moment for him, where he kind of thought, actually, you know, maybe I need to start thinking about the next chapter. And yeah, great that he goes out in his own terms and having, you know, been playing really well, and he kind of weathered a few years of people saying that he maybe should have been out of the team, and then he fought his way back in and then got to retire. So yeah, he's, you know, he'll be sorely missed. You know, he's such a great character within the team and such a brilliant mentor as well, especially in the last few years since giving up the captaincy. So you really have to wish him well. I think everyone in Irish cricket pays, you know, owes him a debt of gratitude and only looks for good things for him for the future.
Yeah, for sure. He seems like the person, Nathan, that this generation of cricket players now and those around them, that he was their hero.
Yeah, by all means. I mean, I grew up watching that great Ireland side with which he led, with the likes of the O'Briens, you know, Ed Joyce, William himself, and you know, that generation that kind of got inspired by maybe the 2011 World Cup victory over England. And, you know, he, as Isabel said, he's kind of like the last link maybe to that great squad. So it's, and there's a lot of guys in around my age in the Ireland side now at the minute. So it's getting to play with him must have been fantastic. And look, he's been a fantastic servant, and his record speaks for itself as well. I think one of my earliest memories, like I said, apart from watching that England game, was going to watch him bat against England in Malahide. And when he scored 100, I think he also scored 80 against them at Lords in an ODI in 2017. So he's, you know, even the fact he's got a good record against England is good enough in and of itself. But yeah, no, absolute hero.
His consistency as well was phenomenal, and even the fact to captain Ireland for 11 years, Isabel, and to compete and play at that level, it's phenomenal, really.
I can't fathom captaining a team for 11 years, actually. And you know, cricket's a funny game in that the captain makes a lot of the decisions. It's not like pretty much every other sport where it's kind of just you have to talk to the press and maybe, you know, make a few speeches when the team aren't doing so well. You have to actually decide who's going to do what, who's going where. And if things don't go well, it really falls on your shoulders. So the fact that he was able to do it for so long is incredible to me. And yeah, to be consistent throughout, and also just his record in the field as well. He was such a leader in everything that he did. 146 catches and 24 runouts. It's incredible. 18 centuries. I don't think we'll see the likes of it again. I don't think that we'll see anyone captain even half that amount of time again, maybe after Balbo, because it's such a difficult job. So I think that in and of itself is a testament to just how great a player he was for Ireland.
And Isabella, it was no surprise to hear him say that the hardest part of the job was knocking on the doors of his teammates or picking up the phone to ring them to tell them that they weren't going to play.
Yeah, I don't think that's something that captains do anymore. You know, it's very, very difficult to you know, because you're obviously teammates with these people, you've got to play with them. And then when they play again, you've got to find a way for them to not you know, hate you the next time, because you'll need them again. And that was something that he did, because all of his players knew that he just wanted the best for the team. That was always his role and always what came out when he spoke and just the way that he played. So that's why he was able to do the job. I think now the chairman of the selectors does that job, which is probably a better idea. but you are involved in selection as captain. So I think in some ways he probably found it easier to own the decisions and have those conversations with players rather than players, you know, grumbling away from him or away from whoever the captain. Obviously, it's Andrew Balbirnie now. That can be sometimes a bit more difficult. So all credit to him that he took that on his shoulders and just, again, that's another measure of the kind of character that he is.
Yeah, and also, Nathan, you can just tell by listening to him as well how much he loves Ireland cricket and how happy he is to be going down a road of coaching. Who knows where it'll bring, but he's so positive about everything and has great ideas and hopes for the future for Irish cricket. And you know, he wants to see more contracted players, he wants to see more women playing, he wants to see more consistency. He has a lot of big hopes for cricket in Ireland as well. And of course, he mentions facilities too, but you can't help but think that we're going to be seeing a lot of him in the future too, from a coaching perspective.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm pretty sure just scouring the Cricket Ireland social media channels over the last few days, the pictures of the guys getting ready for India out in Oak Hill, I'm pretty sure I saw a few snaps of him in some training kits. So he's going to stay involved as long as he can. He squeezed every last drop out of his playing career, which is a full credit to him, the longevity. And he's clearly that type of character. He's loves his cricket, quite obsessive about Irish cricket and being involved and helping in every way he can. So like you said, if you can squeeze that out of his playing career, Lord knows what he can do with it, with a coaching career, which is, you know, could even be longer, which is, you know, a benefit to anyone who comes across him in a coaching capacity, I'm sure.
Yeah, you're right there. I'd say that we'll be talking about him for many years to come with that consistency he was able to display on the pitch and even just the fact that he was able to evolve in all the different roles that he played as a captain and as a player as well. You can just almost picture the way he's going to evolve as a coach over the years too. Nathan, you mentioned the India series there just around the corner. There's a real sense of excitement now because it is sold out and because one of the biggest teams in the world are coming here to Ireland.
Well, just from a personal point of view, I've never watched India play live in person. So that's going to be an experience. I mean, everyone knows about the passion that their fans bring. And it's quite a cliche, but I suspect it's one of those cliches that you don't actually understand until you've been there. And look, it's 8,500 people in Malahide. It's not Mumbai, but it'll still be an incredible occasion, I'm sure. Look, anytime India come over, irrespective of the squad they've got, it's exciting. I mean, you know, having watched a lot of the IPL, a lot of those guys that they picked who might not necessarily be first choice, they're still quality players. And to watch them live and to see how Ireland get on against them is going to be really, really fascinating. And more so for the players. I mean, guys like Paul Sterling, who maybe have been itching to get into the IPL for years, to come across against this caliber of player and to see what they can do. And not just him, a lot of the younger guys as well, who are kind of along a similar career trajectory to him, hopefully. It's just a brilliant test and it's a fantastic opportunity for all involved. I mean, when's the last time Ireland played against a packed house in Ireland? I mean, even that, like, I can't remember the last time that was. So just something as purely simple as that, even if it is a majority Indian crowd, even something like that will be very special for them.
Yeah, and Isabel, when you think about this team as well, and you know the fact they're going through such a transition, new coach, some new faces and names in the squad as well, it's a brilliant opportunity for everybody to show what they're about.
Yeah, it's a big ask for those new players coming in, isn't it? Imagine being Stephen Doherty or Conor Alford and your first call up is against India. There's not really another team that would be more daunting and in front of that crowd as well. It's not just about the number, it's the noise that they bring. That's what really gets you when India are involved in anything. They just have such a grow for the game. I mean, I know that's an Irish saying, but it really describes what they're like about cricket. And I think if you ask a lot of Indians, if they weren't supporting India, who they're going to support, they support Ireland quite a lot. They love the Irish team and they love Irish people. And we have a lot of Irish Indians as well who will be at the game. So they, you know, they're just so delighted to have their home team be over, but also they're proud of their Irish connection as well. So that's a lovely little connection. And you know, we have so many Indians in all of our clubs here now. They're just such an integral part of the game here, so it's lovely to kind of have that little connection when you know, within the clubs, when you go down at the weekend now, on Sunday, they'll all be, if they're not at the game or next weekend, talking about those games. It's another way to connect with those really mm-hmm. important, that really important part of Irish cricket.
So there's a bit of slagging is what you're saying.
I don't think so, but it's just, you know, you can chat about it a bit more. You can have a bit more of a connection, which is always just because it's Irish society is so centered around the pub culture mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. Sometimes it can be difficult, I think. To find things to talk about, but this is something that we'll all have in common. These two great games, regardless of what happens.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be a brilliant few days. Well, a little bit earlier on as well, Andrew Blair-White got talking to some of those new faces within the Irish squad as they were in camp. We will firstly be hearing from Stephen Doherty before hearing the views of pace duo Conor Alford and Barry McCarthy.
Joined by Northwest Warriors opening batter Stephen Doherty. Stephen, in the Irish squad for the upcoming India games, must be extremely exciting.
Yeah, it is. It's obviously such a big event, playing one of the best teams in the world. Everyone's been looking forward to it for a long time, so just can't wait to get going.
I've been brought into the squad off the back of a really strong start to the season for the Northwest Warriors. You must feel your game's in a very good place.
Yeah, I've been happy. You know, I worked hard a lot, a lot of time before the Wolves tour, just before the season, and it's just been nice to kick on, get a few scores. I feel like it's probably been a bit of a long time coming. Haven't got lots of starts in the past, so it's nice to finally be in a bit of form and be here as well.
And is that a confidence thing more than anything? Once you get those couple of scores, that you almost feel that, I wouldn't say that you can do it, because I know you can, but that you're putting your side into match winning positions, and that's what's gotten you this goal.
Yeah, potentially confidence. I tend not to think too much about that side of the game. It's more so like trying to just be as free as I can, and if it happens, it happens. I try to stay as free as I can, and if the performances come, they come. I feel like that's the best mindset I can be in to perform.
And is that a good nature about this Northwest Warriors setup as well, especially in the T20 competition? You've got such license to go and express yourself.
Yeah, definitely. Gary was brilliant at that last season with us. That was the thing he said from the get go, was just to take on the positive options and try your best, and that's all you can do. And I think Boydie's probably taking the same kind of approach, so it's all you can ask for, really.
And in T20 cricket, are you looking at specific matchups before games of who to target, or is it just something that comes to you as you see it?
Yeah, I feel like nowadays, like, loads of coaches and players talk about matchups, so I feel like you kind of know what your matchup is before you play the opposition. So it's one aspect of it.
And in camp before a series like this, I suppose, what's going on in the lead up in the coming days before these India games?
Yeah, well, we met up today was the first day, so I think we were just working on getting a bit of feel, like volume. We all got into the nets, had a bit of a field, and just getting around and getting to know the lads and getting used to, I suppose, the environment and what is to be a great week for Irish cricket.
And you've been involved in so many Irish Wolves squads. I suppose it's not different to you, but the step up into an international squad, do you feel that there's more pressure on you?
There's definitely a little bit more anticipation, I think, because of obviously the size of the event and the nature of the games. But I know all the guys and I've been around them for a while now, so I personally don't feel like there's a massive difference, but I assume that will definitely change once the games start.
And how important is it almost picking the brains of some of those senior players as well when you're in the squad and learning as you go?
Yeah, I think like the lads, like I said, they're all really sound. They're very welcoming, and it's very easy to, I suppose it's easy to just ask questions, you know, like a young player like myself, I've a lot of curiosities, a lot to learn, and there's guys who've worn the shirt for such a long time, it's kind of just easy.
And I suppose your main aspirations are trying to break into this Irish side, either in the one day or T20 format, or both for that matter, and try and cement your spot.
Yeah, that's always the goal, I find. That's what we're here for, that's why we play the game, so I'm just like I'm glad to be here, and hopefully I can get an opportunity and take it if it comes.
And with the India side that are coming over, is it almost a bit of a surreal anticipation when you're playing against guys that have been in the IPL, that have played at such a high standard, and suddenly you're in a squad against them and potentially going to be playing against them?
Yeah, well, like that's international cricket for you. You know, there's just guys that we watch on the TV and guys that have so much exposure to T20 cricket and franchise competitions around the world. I suppose it is whatever way you look at it, you know, like we've so much footage and resources to look, because we know exactly what's coming. So we've a week, and I know Scotty the analyst and the rest of the lads have had a lot of time to prepare, so yeah, I think we're in a pretty good spot.
And finally, as you say, that preparation that goes into it, is that something that must only encourage and make your game even better when you're putting in those hard yards?
Yeah it is. I mean, it's definitely a facet of the game that's helped us a lot. Batters, bowlers alike, I feel like when you know what you're going to face before you face it, it definitely helps. It doesn't make it any easier, but it helps. So it's definitely a facet of the game that's helped us as players.
Joined by North West Warriors and Breedy fast bowler Conor Alford. Conor, in the Irish squad here for the upcoming India series, must be a situation for you that you're immensely proud of, and great to be in the squad.
Yeah, I'm very proud. Very proud of what I've done so far this season. Hopefully just continue. Brilliant opportunity to learn. A lot of great players in the squad, and really excited to see their way of going about doing things and learn from them, and hopefully progress myself from that.
And how would you assess how the season has gone so far? You've been probably one of the breakthrough performers in the Interpros this year for the North West Warriors. Some fantastic performances.
Well, the season's gone really well for the Warriors. Like, I'm really excited. Great team atmosphere, and I wouldn't necessarily just put it down to myself. My performance has been great, but everyone's been great, and it's been a good team environment to be in. I like that, and I'm not just going to sit there and say that I've done completely well.
Yeah, and to be bowling in an attack which has kind of such variety, I suppose you've got the likes of Graham Hume, Ryan McBeth, who have been fantastic with the new ball, but probably different types of bowlers to yourself, and for you to come on at first change with that little bit more raw pace has worked really well.
Yeah, well, we all complement each other very well. As you said, like, we all play a different role completely, and I think that's what our biggest strength is. Every bowler that comes on is completely different. And we do complement each other very well, and I love my role, coming in and bowling as fast as I can, be as aggressive as I can, and ruffling a few feathers. Sometimes it causes a wee bit of friction, but here I enjoy it.
And dealing with Andy McBrien as your captain as well, he's obviously a mine of information, and it has been, I suspect, brilliant in your progression.
Yeah, working with Scrat has been brilliant. Like, he's a very straightforward person. Very typically Northwest in his approach, and I really work well with that. I thrive off Scrat, and it's went very well. It's been a good partnership.
And also the head coach Boyd Rankin, a Breedy man, a Northwest man, and also a big fast bowler. There must be some resemblances that you can call upon, and that he must be a great influence in that he knows exactly, I suppose, what you're going through at this age.
Yeah, well, he knows exactly what I'm going through. I can always relate back to good games, bad games. He knows what's going through my head. We can speak about it after. I haven't had, everything hasn't gone exactly smoothly. I've had bad moments and matches, and we're able to assess it and see where I went wrong, and he can even relate to what might have happened there, which is great to have that. It's hard to get someone with such similar experiences.
And it must be an exciting situation where you're a couple of days away from playing India and a potential chance to play against one of the world's absolute best.
Yeah, that's a really exciting prospect. I'm not going to get too ahead of myself, and I'll take every day as it comes, every training session as it comes. If I've got the opportunity, it would be bloody brilliant. It would be a bit of a dream come true, something I never really expected myself to see myself in that position.
And is it almost a bit of a surreal moment when you see the Indian squad and the guys playing in the IPL and people that you see on the TV so much, that you're in a situation where you're potentially going to be competing against these players?
Yeah, it's a very exciting prospect. It's a bit scary at the same time, because you never really think of yourself as, oh, geez, I could be playing against some of these names. And it's really exciting to be able to have that potential to challenge yourself against them players. That's probably the most exciting part for me. I love to challenge myself in everything that I do, and win or lose, good or bad, as long as I can see how I coped in that situation. Hope if getting into that situation is possible.
And finally, just as you say, with that sort of attitude that you want to keep testing yourself, I'm sure you're really hoping that at some stage you can break into this Irish side and make a position your own.
Of course, it'd be a dream come true. I would love to be having myself in that position. It's nothing that I ever really thought that I could achieve, but as the years have gone by, with the help of the coaches and the improvements that I've made in my action and stuff, I feel like I can just keep going and going and get better and better. It gives me the confidence to go, geez, I could do this, which is something that I didn't think I would have.
Barry, coming into the India series coming up, you must be really excited.
Yeah, certainly am. It's an exciting week ahead of us now. I was involved in 2018, the last time India were here. Well aware of what it brought to cricket in this country. Packed out stadium in Malahide twice, over 10,000 spectators, is a huge occasion. So yeah, I'm delighted to be part of it this time and hopefully make the most of it.
And just starting off in camp here before the series, what does camp, I suppose, in the days leading up to a series such as this entail for you and for the team?
I think it's a little bit different now. Heinrich's obviously involved, so he's got a couple of different methods he wants to use in preparation for the games on Sunday and Tuesday. So it seems we got in with a lot more of drill specific work, big emphasis on fielding and skill sets around everyone's roles and in the games coming up. Tomorrow's quite a heavy day. We've got a double session, which is a little bit different to how it has been in the past. So no doubt it'll be a sore man tomorrow evening. But now he seems to have his methods, and everyone's buying into it. So he's got a real big focus on the future now. So this is the first time we've sort of got hold of what he really wants to bring to the table. So yeah, big week ahead here now. We're in Oakhill today. It was a fabulous setup. Hopefully the weather stays good for us so we can have a really good week training and preparation for these games.
And for you personally, how would you assess how the season's gone so far? Pretty good start to the season for the Leinster Lightning, and a fantastic start to the season for Pembroke, especially with the bat in hand.
Yeah, I always love going back and playing games with Pembroke. It's where I've played cricket my whole life, and it's where I get to play with friends who I've grown up playing with. So it's always nice, and probably have a bit more of a responsibility with the bat there. I'm just trying to make the most of it. When you play when I play slightly higher up the levels, I'm a little bit more down the order, which is my role in professional cricket. But when I do get an opportunity for Pembroke, I do like to make the most of it, spend as much time as a wicket as I can. And the bigger picture really is spend as much time as I can the wicket in club cricket, just in preparation for the bigger games, just to get more accustomed to batting in that side of things. And yeah, bowling I feel I've probably been a little bit expensive in the T20s this year, albeit it's only been four games and we've only had three one day games. So from that side of things, it's a little bit shorter cricket interprovincial side of things, if I'm being brutally honest, but I feel I've had enough hours on my belt with club cricket and that as well, and training around that. So yeah, I feel in a good position, and no doubt this week is going to be a very big week with good build up for the two games. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
And how do you find playing for the Leinster Lightning and being in that position where you're leading the attack as well? Is that a position that you relish?
I did it probably a couple of years ago for Ireland, and probably slightly falling away from it at the moment. And that's something that I'm working back towards to hopefully cement my place in the side and leading the attack. I do like it, and I do it for Pembroke every week I play. And this year specifically with Leinster Lightning, we've been obviously disappointing to hear last week. Peter Chase had to hang off the boots, and what we originally thought was going to be a short term injury ended up being a slightly longer than that, and has ended up being a career-ending injury in one way. So we didn't have him, and Josh was out for a few weeks with an elbow and shoulder. So I had to sort of step up to the mark and lead the attack, and with a couple of other guys out on loan. We did have a couple of young guys in, and I do like to sort of try my best to see and help other guys develop as well, and I think that's something else I can bring to the table. I have enjoyed being the leader of the attack for Leinster, albeit only in a couple of games so far this year.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, there's probably a few younger, fresher faces in that Leinster Lightning side, especially on the bowling side of things. Gavin Hoey, a guy you'd have played heaps with from a club perspective. Mike O'Reilly's come in this year as well. These are, as you say, they're guys looking up to you for that advice. And I've seen you in the games given plenty of advice, of setups, that when you're at mid-on and mid-off. Is that something that you're constantly trying to evolve into your game?
Well, yeah, I think it's probably a characteristic of myself as well. I don't want to just sit back and throw some guys in the deep end. Mikey's come into intervention cricket this year, and he's done very well, and played club cricket against me yesterday, and he had another very good day. So it's nice to see these guys progress, and the bigger picture is down the line someone like Mikey could go on and play a couple of games for Ireland, if not plenty more. So anything I can do in my career to a bit of experience I've had behind me, if I can help him in any way, shape or form to help him get to the next level of his game, I'm not trying to get Mikey or anyone to stand up and say, look, he's been an inspiration in my career, and that's not what I set out to do, but it's just trying to more so make him feel comfortable now he's able to be at that level, and not just Mikey, the other guys as well who are there. I think Gavin's slightly different. Gavin's slightly as a leg spinner, he's probably one of two or three leg spinners in the country, and I think with these guys as well, it'll certainly help when they can play a lot more cricket. I know the emerging series starts this week, so hopefully these guys can get a lot more cricket under their belt, a lot more experience, and hopefully they have a massive career ahead of them.
And finally, for yourself personally, what are your big aspirations for this summer for yourself and for Irish cricket?
Well, at the moment, not really looking too far beyond these two T20s. I'd love nothing more to get a go against India, and I think just show that I can be on the plane to the World Cup, and obviously I think that really is the goal at the end of the year, and anything in between that is just to work as hard as I can. Any chance to get an opportunity, just try and try and get a place on that plane.
Nathan, listening to Conor there, we were talking just before we heard the interviews about how daunting the whole thing is going to be, but he does seem like he's cool as a breeze.
Yeah, he does. It's an interesting one. The last couple of times I played him, he's kind of gone both ends of the spectrum in terms of results-wise. I think there was a game against the Knights where Ross Adair took a liking to him, hit him over his head a few times, and a week later he came back in a T20 game, which is arguably a bit more difficult circumstances as a bowler, and he actually bowled quite well. So, look, he's clearly got some bounce-back ability in there. He's a young guy. I think he's only 25. So perhaps maybe not as young as some of the other guys who have debuted slightly younger. So I feel like that's a nice age to make your debut. He's been there and done that a little bit in terms of domestic stuff and IP stuff. So he has got some experience. And look, at the end of the day, he can bowl fast. I think if you can bowl fast, you've got a weapon. Look, the guys that they're playing against India, well, any players at that level are used to that level of speed. But at the same time, if you know that you can put someone up someone's nose at 85 miles an hour Malahide may or may not be slow, I don't know, but if you know you've got that in the locker, I think it makes it easier, it makes any nerves easier, that's for sure.
Isabel, it sounds like it's almost a little bit surreal for them because they're going to be playing against the biggest stars in the world, like players that they look up to, and it must be a little bit daunting.
Yeah, it will be daunting, but it's at home and they're around a lot of players who've been in probably more daunting circumstances, so they can kind of go with the flow a little bit. I think that will help. I can't imagine the first time playing in India for when it's the first time everyone in the team is doing it. So that would be really daunting because you've no one to follow. You don't know where you're going. You don't know how anything works. But they'll be able to just be taken under a wing and follow along. So I think probably this is a little bit easier. But and the other thing, of course, is there's huge pressure to get into the team. So I think that's it. In a way, playing against India, if you don't perform, it's less of a, it's not as dangerous, I suppose, to your career, you would feel going into the game. So the like to Stephen Doheny can go out and play his shots and hope it comes off. And I think Conor Alford might look back on Peter Chase in Malahide the last time around, and you know he bowled magnificently, and they actually are very similar in the way that they bowl. And you know their stature and how tall they are, where they're pitching the ball, all that kind of stuff. So he's got that to look back on and say, you know, why not?
Yeah, it does feel like maybe the risk isn't there. But Isabel, as well, it's brilliant to hear them talking and to being so kind of self-assured and to have that attitude that they want to go out there and test themselves. And you can see that they're kind of relishing the opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously need to perform to try and stay in the squad, and this is their opportunity, but it's not going to be their only opportunity. I mean, if you do it against India, you've arrived. So it's a great chance for them to do it. And Stephen Doheny's been toiling away for a while now. It kind of feels like a coming of age for him this summer, but he's had to work very hard for it. It hasn't been a case of where that we see sometimes in sport, oh, we'll pick this person based on promise. They haven't actually done it yet. He's been knocking at the door for a while, and then conversely, Conor Alford, I suppose he is a little bit more on the. He can bowl fast. He's tall. Let's see how he goes. Because you don't know until you throw someone in how they're going to do. Sometimes people completely stand up, and sometimes they don't. And I hope for these two that they get a chance at least. I mean, obviously they're just in the squad. They might not get to play a match. But if they do get to play, I hope they do play the way that they've been speaking, because it'll be great to watch.
Yeah, definitely. Quite interesting as well, Nathan, to hear Barry talking about Heinrich, the new coach, Heinrich Mallon, that's in there now. And just listening to him pointing out that things are quite different to what they were in the past. They've done quite a lot of heavy sessions, a big focus on the skill set around everyone's roles. And that they're just kind of getting used to his methods, which is to be expected. But are you thinking that there is going to be much of a difference in maybe what we see out there?
Well, no, I mean, once the players go out there, it's Andrew Balbirnie in charge. That's kind of how it's always been with this Irish team. And he's the main man and he makes all the calls on match day. So once they get out there onto the pitch, I don't think we'll see too much different. I mean, the balance of the side is probably going to be different. They haven't picked Simi Singh. They've only picked Andy McBrien as a frontline spinner with probably some overs from Gareth Delaney. So they pick less spin, so we'll definitely see a different balance to the side, whether they pay an extra seamer or an extra batter. I suspect an extra seamer, which is maybe why they're looking at someone like Alford. So the balance, I don't know who's made that call, if that's Heinrich coming in. I mean, he's got a reputation for developing fast bowlers. It's interesting to see New Zealand pick their squad the other day. Blair Tickner's in that team, and he's someone who was coached by Heinrich down in New Zealand, and a lot of people say Heinrich kind of changed his action and turned him into an international bowler. So maybe, you know, if you want to put two and two together with Ireland picking more seam bowlers and that link with Heinrich, possibly. I don't know. You probably have to ask him. But look, we'll find out, I suppose, on Sunday.
Isabel, what are you expecting?
Well, I think we'll be definitely relying on seam. India are so dominant against spin, so they won't be used to playing on Irish tracks as much as well. So they might find it a little bit sticky, and the different types of seamers that we have, especially working on those skills, those different types of slower balls, hopefully we'll catch them on the hop a little bit. And I do think that we'll see different tactics. You know, sometimes just coming in and looking at the bare stats can be good for a coach. And that's why Simi Singh's been dropped. He just hasn't stats-wise performed. Not that he's bowled badly, but he goes the distance more often than not, and that's been across the last couple of years in T20. He's obviously our best bowler in ODI cricket, and that's great. And he'll be in there. He'll be you know, one of the main players in the ODI team. But in T20, I just don't see it. Whereas McBrien is a little bit more of an all-rounder and is a little bit stickier in T20 cricket. So I'm not surprised to see that. I know it's really difficult for Simi to take. He's absolutely devastated to be dropped, and of course he should be. But I wasn't surprised to see it because coach came in and he's he's got his clear tactics. So yeah, we might see some different types of tactics and different bowling combinations coming in, which is good because we haven't been performing in this format.
Yeah, it is definitely going to be a challenging one. What do you think will be the biggest challenge this squad is going to face, Nathan?
Oh, well, I mean, playing against India. as silly as it sounds, look, these guys play, they just played a 2-month IPL campaign on the best white ball surfaces in the world, arguably in the best T20 competition in the world. So look, they're more battle-hardened than the Irish guys. Getting those new combinations is probably the other challenge. I mean, Ireland used Simi quite a lot in the power play and at the death more so than any other spinner. So there's that. Is there a challenge of a new spinner is going to have to take up that role? Is someone like McBrien all of a sudden going to be bowling over his 17? He hasn't necessarily as much in the past, or do they use the extra seamer? So that's going to be the biggest challenge in terms of personnel, I think, is making up that role and making that decision. But in terms of just flat out challenges, yeah, I mean, these guys, the Indian guys, have played a hell of a lot more cricket at a ridiculously high standard in the last few months, and it's hard to look past that.
What would be success then, Isabel, for this team?
I think a few players other than the usual few putting the hand up would be really, really big success. So not just Sterlo performing with the bat and Balbirnie. If Gareth Delaney, who's been showing a lot of promise and has done well, if he does well, that'll be another person, maybe George Dockrell, Harry Tector, in T20 especially. He's kind of fought his way back in, but he's probably hasn't performed where he wants to yet in T20. And then for the seamers, if anyone can take a few wickets, you can always draw from that in the future. If you're not confident, you can kind of go, well, I did it against India. I took a couple of these big guys' wickets. I mean, there are new players coming into the squad that we wouldn't be used to seeing in Indian colours, but they're performing massively in the IPL. So it's, they could pick three teams, four teams in India, and they'd still be absolutely brilliant. So I don't think that's, it doesn't matter if it's one of those new guys that you get out, it's still as big of a feather in the cap.
Well, there are lots of questions there and they will be answered very, very shortly when those games get underway. So no doubt we will be reflecting on them. But it is now time to reflect on the women's series against South Africa. And I'm going to start with you, Isabel, because we spoke quite a bit about it beforehand. And we knew that it was going to be a tough ask for them going up against South Africa, missing so many players. They did have a big win in that T20 format of the game. What do you think are going to be the biggest takeaways?
It's a good question. The biggest takeaways are we can do it. So we won a game, but we're not really there yet, I think is probably what the girls will be thinking. I spoke to Ed after the series and, he said it went largely how he thought it would go, except for he was not banking on a win. So he's pretty happy with how it went. I mean, people on the outside have heard people giving out about, we're miles off or all that kind of stuff. We're not really that far off. The cricket's a funny game that way. We have had players do well, like Georgina Dempsey is one that we've been talking about a lot on the side of the pitch. She's just shown that she has the ability at the international stage, which you don't necessarily know until you throw people in. So that's a big win for Ireland. Sophie McMahon batted well in one of the games. And Jane Maguire did really well. So they know that coming back in, they've got some really, really big senior players as well. So, they'll be tired. I know a lot of them have gone on holidays this week. They're not used to the kind of pressure and everything that goes around the matches, at which South Africa are. You can see they kind of just kept on going. They're like a machine at the moment. They might be tired by the end of the summer now. They've got a huge schedule coming up. But I think there's lots of really good things that have come out of it. Nearly every player that was involved will have things that they can look back on with pride.
Nathan, are we seeing the squad progressing?
We're definitely seeing them learning, which I think at this stage probably counts as progress given where they are in their professional development. I mean, they're only a few months in. to being full-time cricketers. So it's, I think the fact that they won a game is fantastic. I think that takes off so much pressure for arguably the whole summer. It was interesting that Ed spoke to the press after the game and at the last ODI, and he did say, look, he now knows, having watched his squad in six international games, which he hasn't done for a while, he has a fair idea of where each player in his squad is and where they are with their development and what they need to do. And even that, it sounds relatively simple, but you know, he wouldn't have had that picture in his head until watching them over these six games. You know, they haven't played since November in international games. So I think that's progress in and of itself. Like, you know, Isabel mentioned Georgina Dempsey, Sophie McMahon. I mean, Gabby Lewis has captained six games of international cricket. That's fantastic for her. And she's also scored runs while doing so. That's fantastic both for her. That pressure should hopefully come off her now as Laura Delaney comes back into the side. But, you know, she's 21 years old. If she's 21 years old and able to do that and score half centuries for Ireland while with that pressure and being the side's main batter as well and main source of runs, that's fantastic. So there are lots of positives. I mean, even from one game to the next, like for the second or the third ODIs, the new ball bowlers performed far better as well than Jane McGuire and Arlene Kelly. So there definitely is progress and learnings. I think it's obviously going to be slow at this stage, but it's enough that it keeps the coaching staff happy, I think. And right now, that's the main thing.
Isabel, it's having something to build on and knowing as well that there is continuity of fixtures to come over the next few months.
Yeah, well, one of the things I was talking to Ed about was just how having a series like that makes it easier as a coach than your next training block, because you know what the players need to work on a lot of the time. And I mean, he obviously says that he now knows more things about what people need to work on, but it's quite hard sometimes to persuade the players they need to keep working on something. They might think they have it. So for example, you might think, oh no, I'm grand at that high catching, like I'll do a few, but I kind of have it. But actually then they drop it in the game and you say, well, it's very different with this, you know, in these conditions or the swirling wind or in the sun or just in the pressure of the game. So then you don't have to kind of persuade them. They've seen it, they know it. And you go back to the drawing board and say, no, we haven't cut enough. Or, you know, a particular shot, no, I'm fine at that. I can play my guy down to third man. Well, actually, no, you nicked off when it's against the likes of Ismail. So then you go back and you train and you become that, you know, 10% better at it. And, you know, go into the next series and see, are we at the right place? And that's how it works. But if you have a big gap, then you do that training and it starts to fall away and you kind of forget what you were learning. And, you know, you don't know until the next series, which is in 6 months, I should have still been working on that. So they need these consistent series so that they can put those learnings in. And if they can improve those things by 5-10% each time, then hopefully in the next this cycle, we'll see a very different team at the end if they're to play South Africa at the end of this cycle than we're seeing at the moment.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. All right. And of course, as well, Nathan, there's so many players to come back too, which is another, be an added bonus really, because we were missing so many with injury and exams. So you're going to have all of that coming together as well over the summer.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is encouraging because a lot of the players to come back are going to come into areas where Ireland probably struggled in this series. So Laura Delaney is going to come back in and bolster that middle order. Hopefully Amy Hunter comes back from her exams. I think she's been batting three a lot. Not a middle order position, but it elongates the batting lineup. You know, Rebecca Stokel, she's been playing club cricket, so hopefully she's back as well soon. And even someone like Orla Prendergast, I know she's down as a bowler, but her batting skills, she was good enough to play in a series last year and in that Zimbabwe tour just as a batter. So I think the fact that those big names are coming back, but equally where they're going to come back is going to bolster where Ireland were probably weakest in this series. So that's definitely positive.
Yeah, there'll be plenty of opportunities as well to see games over the summer. Lots of tickets available for those home internationals. Before we finish up, we're going to have a very quick chat about the National Cup second round results. Nathan, what caught the eye for you?
Well, I watched one of the games. I was at the YMCA Pembroke one, which was probably the most, looking at scorecards, is the most exciting tie of the round in terms of it actually was a tie. Would have loved a super over, but alas, wasn't to be. But the other standout looking at scorecards was just how much the Irish internationals stood up. And it's been a theme this year, also in the Interpros. And it's been noted, I was chatting to Heinrich Milan before, and he said, look, he's really happy to see the national guys standing up at Interpro level. And they've gone back to their clubs and they've done it in this round. I mean, you know, even guys who have kind of just been recently out of the Irish setup, the likes of Shane Gedcate and McClintock, you know, they both got runs. Isabel mentioned Gareth Delaney recently. He's in good form. He's got 90. George Dockrell as well. And in that YM Pembroke game, Aaron McCarthy and Curtis Camphor both got some runs. So it's good to see those Irish internationals go back and dominate at club level, especially a week before this series.
Isabel?
Bel Brinigan beating Estonians, defending 157, is really impressive. I think they're kind of a team that either hits or misses. They're hitting a bit more in the last few weeks, and that will be a big feather in the cap for them, beating Estonians. So it'll be interesting to see how they go against Phoenix in the next round. And then Leinster beating Warringstown. I know Warringstown were missing three players because they're gone on that tour, but I mean, welcome to club cricket this summer. It's going to be like that for the foreseeable. That's what we're going to see when we've got all these internationals, and then tours just beneath. Clubs are going to have to get used to their players, and they should be, you know, obviously you're happy your players get picked. You don't want them to be gone, but you want them to be picked. That's why you're developing them. So it is. It's a kind of a bittersweet one for Warringstown. So, you know, the first time they've not been involved at the next stage of the competition in a very long time. But yeah, that's big for Leinster, and Gareth Delaney is, as you said, did really well for them. The Clontarf-Marion game probably wasn't as exciting as it could have been. Owen Delaney did really well in that game. He came in at number five when the chips were down. He battled through and got them to a decent total. And then the bowling of Clontarf, even without David Delaney, saw them home, which they'll be pleased about. But yeah, the Pembroke beating YMCA is a massive match, and you know, you have to feel for YMCA, that's difficult, and maybe we will see his change in the rules. But I don't think we've seen a tied game in the Irish Cup before, so you can forgive them for not having that that involved in the rules until now. So I always say about that, those kinds of changes, you need something to happen before you're going to change a regulation, otherwise people get annoyed by there being too many regulations. So, yeah, and then, you know, no surprise the Hills beat Cork County. Mark Donegan scored 100 in that game. And then Lisburn will be delighted they're through. They beat Donnymana. So two teams from the NCU and six from Leinster in the Irish Cup. And then, you know, the National Cup was pretty entertaining as well. North County is the pick of that game, pick of that round, beat St Johnstone, even though St Johnstone were 27-6. And they came back and set the target, and then, you know, North County only beat them by 2 wickets. So two really good competitions, and it's brilliant to have them back.
Okay, well, Isabel and Nathan, thank you so much for your opinions today. I think we covered a lot of bases. Thanks everybody for listening to today's episode of Green Ball Podcast. We'll be back in your feed regularly throughout the year, so the best idea is to make sure you subscribe to the channel to get the latest episode of the Green Ball Podcast.